This is the Order of Battle. Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
This weekend, I grabbed my ticket for Marauder Mayhem 2. I think I may have been in the first few people to get one because I was refreshing my browser like a madman. It went up about a minute early. I'm really looking forward to the event. Obviously, you sat in with me last year.
I won't be sitting in with you again this year, I don't think.
No, we had an extra ticket because I thought, I had like the add-on ticket because I thought Nicole would be with me. So this year, I just grabbed the ticket for myself. I'm looking at the website right now. It looks like there's 13 left. I'm assuming it'll probably be sold out by the time this airs. It basically has all the same perks as last year. They've said there's more. It's the same price, so if they deliver exactly what they delivered last year, then I'm sold, and if there's more. The one thing I will touch on is they're running some sort of, like, I don't know if it's raffle or like drawing a name out of a hat or whatever, but one person will get one of the new heads named after them.
That's a fun little bonus.
Yeah, I mean, if I win anything extra, that's great. I don't know if I necessarily want my name attached to a head. Unless maybe it had glasses and I could finally finish that Steel Brigade custom. But so the bigger topic of today is the three of us have sat down and watched the first three episodes of G.I. Joe Renegades.
Love them.
G.I. Joe Renegades was a reimagining of G.I. Joe in 2010 and it had 26 episodes. A group of young Joes are forced to become fugitives after a spy mission goes horribly wrong that involves the explosion of Cobra Industries pharmaceuticals. Now branded as Renegades by the media for crimes they did not commit, they're forced to fight. Pursued by the military and Cobra mercenaries, they must use all their skills to prove their innocence and expose the true face of Cobra Industries and its mysterious leader, Adam DeCobre. In the first episode, the first minute, that intro commercial is amazing. I don't know if you caught it, but right at the end, it's kind of a heavy-handed biblical reference. Cobra Commander pulling down the apple and handing it to the little girl. Although I thought it was heavy-handed, I think they cover it up a little bit by distracting you with the knowing is half the battle tag.
Something I enjoyed a lot about Renegades, which you didn't have to search to find a lot of the Easter eggs or, you know, like hidden things for the older fans. Like most of the stuff that they sandwiched into these episodes were just hammered right in your face, but I like it.
I think it's hammered right in your face because you know a lot about the brand. One of the things that I do like is they don't go out of their way to explicitly give you all the Easter eggs. Some of that's later on, but from episode one, Roadblock's name is changed. It's now Hansen. I think they capture Roadblock really well, even though they've changed his name. They left everybody else's names to be the same, it seems like. They sort of slip in everybody's code names, which I kind of like that concept of not... Yeah, they're not a...
Full-fledged team.
Except for the Lady J one, that threw me off kilter a little bit because everybody else is going by strict military, giving each other code names, but then Lady J just has one. I think even Flint uses it.
Yeah, Flint uses it. And he says Flint.
Yeah, he gives himself a nickname.
I think it's a very well-written episode, which you texted me about, I think, twice while we were watching Renegade separately. The way that they kind of set the team in motion and they kind of set the dynamics between the personalities, I thought was like a masterstroke. And it's written well enough that A likes it, you and I like it. I believe it was the highest streaming show or highest viewed show on the hub at the time. All the characters fit themselves so well from how we know them. All the stereotypes I enjoyed. Normally that over-the-top accent is generally a little bit annoying to me. I liked it within the episode. It's just, it was written well, and the dialogue was real and believable, while still being fun. The opening scene where they're training, I love that sort of stuff. I love that 80s action movie, like, training montage or gearing up montage. I thought it came right out of the gate, pedal to the metal, we're flying.
It's an excellent setup. Duke is your everyman. He is your super soldier. You know, he's your standard mainline guy, which is a bit weird to say in today's climate, but they left him as that. Duke is boring. He's not as interesting as all the other characters, but he gets the job done. I mean, that's his gig, right? Scarlett's demeanor, I thought, was perfect. She outranks everybody, and she really doesn't give a damn about their personal stuff. She's there for the mission. The redo of Ripcord was excellent, because Ripcord really didn't have a lot of personality outside of love candy and went on a revenge mission. One of the things that I absolutely adored was Hawk's redesign.
I love how old Hawk was with the eye patch, like bald, walking with a cane.
They are subtle because they called him Abernathy, and the only thing for Hawk is the handle on his walking cane.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
Within the agency of the military, you have Scarlett is working for Hawk, and they have put together this team of ordinary Joes, and she's not honest with the Joes from the start.
Well, I don't even know if she's working for Hawk, since he really didn't know who she was. It looks like she just sort of took it upon herself to set this up.
You're right. I'm definitely confusing that.
Major Hidalgo mentions her to Abernathy as one of your intel ops, and he's like, all right, which one is she?
Which is interesting, because obviously, like, it really builds to the frustration on Duke's behalf, because he's your straight-laced, like, I do everything by the books, I live for my military career, and then he's dropped into this, like, crapshoot of a mission that, you know, obviously goes wrong, because we find out that the other general or man in command that you just referenced is selling out the military, trying to make money through Cobra. There's so much going on in this 20 minutes. It's a pretty complicated storyline for episode one of anything.
I love the designs. They're true to the character, and they're modernized in a way that I wish Classified was doing. We've talked about that before. If you have two different scales concurrently, make one of them dead the same as always, but then the other scale, go wild. The Baroness's design is amazing. And then with Cobra Commander being DeCobre instead of the Baroness, I thought that was perfect. Before we even get to Hidalgo, his betrayal, which I thought, it's a tropey, obvious betrayal. It's an obvious turn. But throughout the episode, and this is what I thought was so smart about the episode, or about the writing, the emotional struggles are easy. Like, right from the jump, Duke is saddled with people that don't fit his
beliefs
is a good one. They don't fit his standards.
I really liked the drastic redesign of Mindbender, and I absolutely loved the concept and design of the BioVipers. Very high science, very sci-fi, very of the time of other cartoons existing, but still felt like G.I. Joe to me.
I really liked them, and the BioVipers were like indestructible. Bulletproof, sword proof, explosion proof, and they have to kill it with weed killer. Weed killer attack! Attack of the weed killer! Weed killer versus bio viper. Who wins? Weed killer.
I like that even with the insanity and sci-fi element of the bio viper, I like that at the end of the day, it's still an organic thing. And they found a very simple, semi-organic/man-made way to stop them that obviously Mindbender didn't think of. Or maybe he thought most military personnel aren't going to have Roundup.
Yes, bring on the Mega Marine shit. I'm down all day. The BioVipers were awesome.
Yeah.
Bender was annoying, but in the best way.
I know.
They got rid of the hand-wringing, older, evil Venom, and they got rid of the weird, pompous Mindbender, and they gave us this sort of young Pratt.
Smarmy kid.
Teenager.
But that's where I was talking about from the jump, where they were building that emotional stuff, is the team doesn't fit Duke's standards. Scarlett gets on, and none of them fit her standards. They are nothing more than dress code for her. And then that could have been a perfect in-and-out mission, but Duke's power struggle against Scarlet, he defied her order to go after Bender. They don't stand on a lot of exposition, so on the way out, the helicopter blows up. They just turn and grab a vehicle. Or I guess Snake Eyes grabs the vehicle. They're not feeding it to you. They're just putting it out there. The writing is really clever. Did you have anything that you didn't like about this episode?
No.
I don't think I really do either. I mean, I love this cartoon. I remember catching some of these episodes on TV. Like, Snake Eyes' entrance is so typical and, like, overdone, but it was still amazing to me. Like, I still enjoyed it.
It's very Snake Eyes.
I even like when they threw in the Eastern music mixed in the background. Maybe it's because I have my blinders on because I love the design and I love the show. But for episode one, and spoiler alert for episode two and three, I don't have really any complaints.
Right back one more time on the designs. Those troopers are some of my favorite trooper designs of any era.
Yeah, they're pretty good. And I do kind of have a complaint, kind of not. It was kind of sad when Ripcord died.
I would have loved to have seen him live long enough to meet Candy the Balloon Bear. Yes, I agree.
Candy the Balloon Bear, it's an in-Renegades, isn't she?
No, buddy, but it's just a joke back to Ripcord from the comic books. The only thing I didn't like about this episode, and I get why they did it, because it's still a cartoon, it's still for kids, but when the Baroness betrays Major Hidalgo, he's just disintegrated. I think when they show the chair, it's either like a burn mark in the chair or maybe like a little pile of dust, but he's just vaporized. To me, that's lame. Also, who the hell's going to sit in that chair next? That's my only negative for the show. I like Duke's design. I love Scarlet's design. I really love Roadblock's design. Tunnel Rat and Ripcord's design are also really cool. There's not a lot to do with Snake Eyes, but the way they gave him the gray arms and everything and the sheath on his back, I thought he looked really neat. This whole cartoon felt like a marriage between the realism of the Joes from the comic book and the high science of Cobra from the cartoon.
The short-lived Renegades toy line is probably like my second favorite G.I. Joe toy line that I own. I have a good amount of the Cobra Troopers. That was kind of one of my earliest like big achievements was when I realized that I had completed all of the Renegades figures that made it to and through production.
That's a mixture of Renegade card and 30th card, right?
Yes. The same exact blue card back with the same digital explosion. They just added Renegades in gray text above the G.I. Joe logo. The biggest tragedy to me, besides the show itself getting canceled way too early, was the amount of toys that were tooled up and ready to go for Renegades that never made it past, I'm guessing, like test shot stage. I know if you Google G.I. Joe Hasbro concept case, one of the Joe-Cons, they showed up with what is the concept case, and it had all sorts of amazing unproduced Renegades stuff, and also just stuff from the same era that just never made it to production.
That's a shame. I would love one of those Cobra trucks.
The Cobra truck exists to some degree, you know, as like a gray model.
I guess jumping ahead to episode two, the missile trucks that the Baroness has, those would be cool as well, because you could kit the internals of those out with different things.
To bring it back to the actual show, that is, what a dark moment when the Baroness is just like, send the bombs.
Episode two starts with calling them Bio-Vipers again. So these are legit Bio-Vipers, which I bring that up just to solidify how much I love them bringing Megmarines into this. I adore that whole idea of them going, what's something that's little used? What's something that maybe is hated by a portion of the community? Let's make it dope. Bio-Viper. I also love how throughout episode two, the Baroness and Mindbender are having a power struggle tug of war using the commander's name as a threat. I love that they have the same goal, but they are not cohesive in their approach.
It's also nice to see both sides struggling with the same thing. Just one is way more toxic than the other one.
Even by midway through episode two, they had already started to set up Scarlet and Duke always bicker. Tunnel Rat and Roadblock always bicker. Anytime Scarlet and Duke fight, Tunnel Rat and Roadblock have the solution, and vice versa. That's a clever way of they're grouping them up, but they're also using each other to resolve the internal strife. By episode 2, Snake Eyes starts to become ninja magic.
I think my biggest standout of design love in this episode has to be the flying drones. Kind of bringing it back to the darkness that I brought up earlier, like, not only is the Baroness ready to just launch 2 missiles and completely obliterate Springfield, they've set up like a laser fence. They have flying killer drones ready to take out anybody trying to escape.
And the military isn't on standby. The military is hands off while they do that to an entire town.
It's also funny within, so you have the people of Springfield who hate Cobra. Throwing back to episode 1, you have Ripcord who's like, no, my mom's worked for Cobra forever. It's just this funny mix. I've always loved that Cobra exists on the front lines and is like a public thing.
It's Apple or Tesla or GE.
Yeah, the facade of them being this like community-based, loving corporation that is actually like draining communities of everything they have.
Speaking of the dark side of this show, when the locals run up to Mindbender, that is one of my favorite parts of the episode. They run up to him, they're freaked out, they talk about a monster, and he, in their face, calm as can be, gaslights them. You're hallucinating. You should have got out when the going's good. He's not wearing a mask either. By all rights, he should be hallucinating too. If he's just gaslighting them. And when the monster shows up, he's excited by it. When it goes wrong, he just cuts out and insults them on the way out. It is nuts to me how dark they've made the Baroness and Mindbender with so very little effort.
Talking about his escape, the Cobra helicopter is gorgeous.
It really is.
I think it just must be something that they have worked out into the brand where anytime there's an unproduced Cobra helicopter, it has to be the dopest design you could ever imagine. Because like in the comics, there's the Cobra crane helicopter that is obviously like on everybody's want list that never existed. You know, I'm just going to fawn over the designs again. You brought her up, but this look for Baroness is like it for me.
Oh, it's so good.
Outside of original comics, this is the design that I just wish.
I like this design better than original Baroness.
Me too. I wish that we got a figure. You know, I'll be saying that a lot throughout most of this, but.
One of the things that I liked about this, when Flint walks in, he immediately is like, he's going to be the show's resident asshole. He does it right from the jump. Lady J drops the I don't date suits. So they are immediately like putting a cleaver in between that Lady J Flint love affair that is both in Marvel and in Sunbow. Maybe it gets there later on. I haven't seen all 26 episodes. I like that. Slow your roll, Captain. He has the counter of Duke saved your life, which also clears up why Lady J, someone that Duke saluted and who gave him his mission, would also be taking the time to help him out.
I love the dynamic they set up with Duke and Flint and having like an old college rivalry or high school rivalry or whatever level of football it was. Immediately when they show up to Springfield and Flint rolls up, Lady J is frantically trying to figure a way to throw Duke an escape cord without throwing herself in trouble. Luckily for her that Flint can't exist without trying to puff his chest up. He walks up and puffs his chest and then Duke has to flex back. And that creates this like millisecond of a window where Lady J is like, all right, well, I can grab the keys and I can set this up.
I like how Tunnel Rat was like, no, those mushrooms are poisonous. And he swatted them out of Roblox hands. And gathered up 3 leeches and put them in his cup. And they never got touched until Snake Eyes took the cup from him and threw him at the electrified fence. Take that, fence! Woo!
They've done a great job with Tunnel Rat's demeanor.
Yeah, and how he tasted the Bio Viper goo and was like, this is plant material! He automatically knows it's plant material. I thought for a moment he was going to turn into a bio viper. Ah! And they need to save him. The kid was trapped inside the bio viper. I also thought he would turn into a bio viper when that stuff kept creeping up on his leg.
I know the crossbow is a very peculiar item in the fandom, but I like this interpretation of crossbow much more than just obviously a standard crossbow, but I thought it's interesting in a show filled with lasers, they found a way to make a crossbow insanely effective and insanely useful.
That crossbow would have been either on the farm or in the Cobra truck, which is either way a little odd for her to magically pull that out of nowhere. Yes, at least it was in a really interesting way and not shooting down a jet. The thing that I liked the least was something you've already said you really liked. This is just sort of how I am with all things, though. Flint and Duke knowing each other, to me, was dumb, and it's unnecessary. It didn't add to the story, and it doesn't provide any extra motivation for Flint to go chasing these people. So to me, it's pointless. You could just pull it out, and he still has the same motivation to go chase down renegade personnel and put them down. Also, doing it once was fine, the whole Ordinary Joe's thing, but they're going to keep reiterating that in every episode, I'm assuming, because they do in episode 3. To me, that's just kind of, ugh. I guess you got to call them something, and so Ordinary Joe's is better than an alternative, I suppose.
Well, I had two favorite moments. One was when that guy who was riding a motorcycle in front of those pedestrians hit that, like, rock or something and fell off his bike, and his bike flew into the electrified fence and blew up. And my other one was also the Ordinary Joe's thing. They are not Ordinary Joe. They're crazy. They're insane.
Should they be the Insane Joes, then?
No, they should be just some Renegade Joes.
My least favorite was Mindbender saying, come to daddy, to the Bio Vipers. And my favorite, either just Lady J in general, or Cobra Commander having the hologram and like talking behind in his weird half mask. I loved it in Johnny Mnemonic. I love it here.
I loved the hologram as well. I thought it was fantastic, as well as Cobra Commander using Serpentor's catchphrase.
This I command.
The whole A-Team feel of this series, just from episode 2 and 3, I really like it. It's so fun to me.
Okay, I know what my favorite for number 2 is.
Perfect, hit us.
When the Bio Viper just ripped the cage off that helicopter, and Mindbender was like, hey, copter, come here. Bye! Flew off.
Going back to episode 1 when we were talking about how it's heavy-handed for us because we're lifelong Joe fans, but I think they're doing it in a subtle and organic way. The Baroness brings up McCullen. She doesn't bring up Destro. She brings up McCullen. She brings up Mars.
Episode 3 starts off hot. I love the Jeep scene. My first two notes are, Jeep scene is great, Snake Eyes rules.
My notes on that were ninja magic.
My notes on that were, Torrent hates Roblox music.
I really like that they let us know that this is in Chicago. And I like that it's a real place. Obviously, Springfield is purposefully ambiguous.
But putting us in Chicago means that it could be Springfield, Illinois, which is also corn country. So it does lock down Springfield a little bit.
Yeah. I like, again, that they bring in a pretty heavy tone with what we think is just a PTSD vet kind of going wild in the street, causing problems and going after somebody. Cobra is doing insanely devious things.
This is the second time in 3 episodes that Duke has handballed a live grenade. So he is, once again, the proto-super soldier. One thing right at the very beginning of this episode that irks me, I think she tried it in episode 2 as well, and she tries it a couple times, but she keeps trying to call Duke Grunt. And it just doesn't fit to me because he's not Graves. He's not Grunt. It's awkward to me. It doesn't fit. The setup was cool, wanting clothes to blend in, even though they're driving a Cobra truck. The vets being mind-jacked and how the team is split on how to help them is great. I really like that Duke wants to help and that Tunnel Rat just kind of gets angry. Scarlet's focused elsewhere. Roblox, I think they could have done a little more with. You know what I mean? Instead of making him just like, I'm good with whatever, Roblox seems the type that he would want to help, not just shrug and move.
That definitely was a pretty interesting plot point. And again, just the heaviness of the tone. I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but pretty serious stuff mixed into truly a kid's cartoon. I mean, if you were to look at the Bio Viper paired up with this topic, it's like you could not get further away from the other.
It's a preacher who's kidnapping vets. But the fact that the preacher turns out to be scrap iron, I audibly cheered.
Yeah.
When McCullen walked in, no metal mask, and said scrap iron, I cheered.
I have in all caps, Steeler, scrap iron, Destro, goddamn.
Yes. As soon as they said Pulaski, like I knew that was Steeler. But they didn't call him Steeler until the end of the episode. Are these proto-bats? Is this a proto-armor tech? Is this a callback to Sunbow's arena fights? There's so many things that this episode could be, and I don't know if these show up later on because I haven't seen it. So proto-bat or proto-armor tech, the mechs were cool. I love that Scrap Iron is a Mars engineer. That's what it says on his file card, but we never see that in the cartoon or comics. He's just a dude with a scar on his face and loves to blow things up.
In this episode, for this universe, we learn how he gets the scar, which is probably the most far-fetched thing of the episode, that missile gets thrown football style by a mech, hits a helicopter, and it only manages to break half of the windshield and hit Scrap Iron in the face, and not completely, explode the helicopter.
It was a tiny missile.
It was a tiny missile. I'm assuming that it blew up on proximity instead of contact. The sonic tone-induced rage, I thought was silly, but Cobra and Mars are ahead of the tech curve, so it works in the universe without being corny. One of the things that I really loved about this episode, and it was such a small thing in terms of the episode, Anastasia and James are flirting. They're business flirting. And Baroness says the wrong thing, and James just hangs up, and it's perfect.
The development of the ins and outs of all these different characters, it's something I really enjoy throughout this series. You're seeing this human and devious side of all of the Cobra characters playing each other. And this has happened throughout all G.I. Joe media, so it's not new by any means. But it's just done very well, in my opinion, in the Renegades. I was not crazy about the look of the mechs. I do like mechs. Like, I just wish they looked a little different. They looked a little clunky to me. I do love that they were essentially in the X-Men Danger Room. To bounce in and out with a couple of comments you've made, the sonic noise thing is a bit eh for me, but it works within the context of the show. I did enjoy seeing both Tunnel Rat and Roadblock in, like, super rage mode. And then obviously Roadblock being, you know, the massive entity that he is personality-wise and size-wise, of course, would be the ideal soldier to essentially be rage mode mech driver. Again, another kind of tacky thing that I don't like, but I do like at the same time, is the iPod music being what snaps him out.
That made me laugh because if heavy metal conditions the brain so that they don't go off the deep end with the rage sonic tone, then 90% of military personnel should be fine.
Not to get too political on the podcast, but during the siege of Waco, I think they were blasting like Pantera to try to drive out the people out of the compound. So there's always some weirdness mixed in with music and stuff like that within the military, I guess. Questionable military procedures. My final note on the episode, I hate that fake metal song. I absolutely hate it.
I want to come back to that.
But I like it within the context of the show. I hate it as a standout thing.
My least favorite thing is when Scrap Iron did that whole thing with the knockout coffee, like, are you a veteran? Yes. Then you get this knockout coffee. If you're not a veteran, you get this not knockout coffee.
Should he have given everybody the knockout coffee?
No. I think it should have been delivered in a different way. And I really liked those mechs. Those mechs were amazing.
I don't know if you caught this or not, but the doctor was Dr. Greer. So that's Doc.
Of course it was Doc. I guess this is the easiest. I did not notice on this watch.
The resolution of this episode was the goofy shit part of the episode. But so far, these episodes are coming together like butter. I cannot stress enough how good they are and how much I'm loving the writing. the character design and everything else. But in terms of the song, you're a working musician. Talk to me about this song.
I come from like a punk and hardcore background. So whenever media tries to portray like punk or metal or any of these like subcultures that I'm, you know, a part of to an extent, it's always wrong. Kind of on a separate note, but I'll throw it in here. Yesterday I watched Coming to America, and during the wedding scene, and you know, there's a band playing, and I said out loud, why can't they just get someone on set that knows how to set up drums?
So that movie was ruined by the drum scene at the end.
No, it wasn't ruined. It was just that scene. I mean, it's not ruined because I've seen this my entire like adult life. The amount of equipment that guy had in this movie, it's been the standard setup since the 1950s. So you could look at a picture of a four-piece drum set with two cymbals and a set of hi-hats. You could find millions of photos on Google on how to properly set it up. Taking the same irritation, so this metal song that Roadblock's playing, so that what did this, when did this air, 2010? They have the modern, overproduced digital sound of a generic heavy metal band with like the squealing guitars, double bass, and then for some reason there's like King Diamond on vocals. It's just one of those things where, like, I guess they didn't want to put in, like, the more guttural style of vocals that would have fit with the music that was being played in the background. It's like, yeah, this is not what that sounds like. Or no wonder Tunnel Red is so mad because like, that tidbit of a song is so offensive. Like, I get what you're trying to do, and I guess I'll give you a B for effort.
Over the weekend, there was a small show in Trinity, Alabama. It was the Southeast Vintage Toy and Trade Show. This is the second time they've done it. I think the first time was like 6 months ago, September, October. There's a small strip on the side of the Gordon Perry Highway, and on one side of the strip is a toy shop called Total Nostalgia. It's a small shotgun shop that is rammed with toys, tons of different types of toys. Outside of G.I. Joe, it has all the things. Pokemon cards and video games and music and records. It's just a packed little shop with a lot of stuff. On the opposite side of the strip, there's an empty shop. They set up this toy show. When we went to it the last time, maybe 5, 6, 7 vendors. A and I drove down Saturday and there was 10 to 15 vendors. They were in the grass on the other side of the parking lot. Parking lot was full. People were parked in like the grass field beside the strip. It ran the gambit. There was Transformers. There was Jurassic Park. There was wrestling. There was Turtles. It was all over the place. I think from the time we left our house to the time we got home, it was about 10 hours. A quick little day trip. A buddy of mine owns a toy shop about 30 minutes from there, but he was out of town and his shop was closed. Otherwise, it might have been even a longer day. Not everybody had masks on, so A and I were extra careful. One of the things that I love about the show last time and was excited for this time, there's some old guy and his wife that pulls up with a truck with one of those like hot dog heater things on the back, you know, and he opens up the big side panels and he had a ribeye and pepper jack sandwich without condiments. It's amazing. It's such a good sandwich. So we had them last time. And as soon as we showed up, we were like, oh, the truck's here.
Last time we were there, I had the bacon donut.
That's right. So the last time we were there, Joel, they did a bacon burger, but they used a donut as the bun. Yeah, they were out of those this time. I'm glad you remember that.
So I did get two random Exo Squad figures, one Exo Squad mech, and another Exo Squad mech that had the figure. We also got the original 12-inch Foot Locker. And inside, there was a bag of random 12-inch things. And some might not even have been G.I. Joe, like Action Man or something.
So aside from what you brought home, what did you think of the show?
I loved it.
There was a 6-inch scaled Skyhawk prototype that was specifically designed for the classified figures, except for Cobra Island Roadblock. Cobra Island Roadblock's shoulders were just a little too wide. Then there was a second one that was painted for Sky Patrol that was part of the raffle. I don't know when or if these classified Skyhawks are going to be produced in a way to buy them, but since there was a prototype there that you could put your hands on and play with, and I can only assume that there would be a way to buy one later on.
Someone actually did buy that hands-on prototype.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I heard the guy who was selling it say that the skids glowed in the dark.
Aside from the Exo Squad and the 12-inch footlocker and gear, we really didn't pick up anything else. Not that things weren't there. There was a lot. There just wasn't anything that was on our list, especially with Toylana coming up a week later. The community aspect of it was great. I had some amazing conversations, really great time hanging out, and I look forward very much to the next Southeast Vintage Toy Swap.
I was incredibly jealous of you being within a short driving range of a toy show. For that matter, like, you're in a very short driving distance of toy shops. I have a really good toy shop up here that I stopped in on Friday. Unfortunately, there just isn't a lot of what I'm looking for up here. I've been supplementing that with trying to find Star Wars vehicles or whatever other thing I can convince myself I need to buy to scratch that itch.
Well, I kept trying to convince you to buy a couple things while I was at this show.
Friday afternoon on my way home from work, I stopped. And I pawed through the shop, and I love the owner. He's a great guy. And we were kind of BSing, and he had a figure I was looking for, which is the NECA Phantom figure. It's kind of a hot commodity right now. I've seen a lot of quality control issues. Like, I've seen a lot of problems with that figure. So with the quality control issues, I cannot pay more than retail for this figure. Man, I thought we were past this phase of NECA.
Why support NECA's line if it's not up to snuff?
I just love the Phantom, and...
Sure.
And that's basically it. I think solely because I love the way they look. I'm fine buying it and not opening it and just putting it on display. I don't really have fun posing 6-inch or 7-inch figures outside of, like, mixing in my King Kong with my G.I. Joes. Like, if this was 4-inch and it was doing this, I just wouldn't buy it. And knowing that I have the Boss Fight Phantom in my scale coming, like, I'm going to have an opportunity to take pictures of the Phantom. I'm going to have an opportunity to take pictures of Flash Gordon and Ming. I don't necessarily need to pose these NECA figures, but the sculpts are outstanding.
That makes sense. That's why I was asking, because with what you normally look for in a figure, leaving it in the package doesn't seem useful. But since, as you mentioned, it's not a 4-inch scale, it's not the scale that you like taking into the woods and setting up, a display figure is a display figure.
That is very true. Saturday morning rolls around. I'm texting with you. I'm just jealous.
I tried. It just didn't work out.
Before we get to that, I woke up and I saw the post that Roma Collectibles was having a 15% off sale. So without hesitation, I hit the site. And I put in an order for $170.
I mean, you gotta.
So I took advantage of the sale to kind of continue my Animal Warriors of the Kingdom bender. They have two different exclusives. I bought 3 of one and 1 of the other. And then I had bought 2 more Animal Warrior figures that I didn't have and that were sold out pretty much everywhere else. And the big item, and it's one that I missed out on, and I never chatted about it with you. There is a boss fight figure called Vandar the Wandering Warrior, and he kind of looks like Conan the Barbarian. Comes with 2 heads, a load of accessories, typical boss fight loadout. I use this 15% sale, plus the law of average that I always do on bundle buying, to, you know, I averaged out to be like $23 a pop. So that, to me, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I immediately grabbed a screenshot, and I sent it to you, and... You stumble across a couple of Star Wars vehicles that we had talked about, and we got really excited because we thought one of them was, like, the find of the year until you took it out of the box.
It was not.
And it was missing the parts that make it, not only make it complete, but the parts it was missing, you know, after I would have bought those parts on the secondary market, I could have just bought the thing brand new.
Well, I haven't gotten much in the way of G.I. Joe toys lately. Dan Klingensmith Jr.'s latest book, he kickstarts every issue, just came out. or rather just mailed, and I received it. It's volume 7 of what originally was called 3.75 Joes, but I guess now that he is working with Hasbro in some capacity, I don't know the capacity, so I'm not going to try to speak from authority on this one. It is renamed as Creating G.I. Joe. Clearly, he's doing something with Hasbro since he's using G.I. Joe instead of just Joes. I know you haven't picked these books up yet. I know every time a Kickstarter drops, I'm yelling, do it, do it, do it. The initial investment to get caught up is not insignificant. I will reiterate one more time, it's worth it. And when Volume 8 Kickstarter goes live, I'm going to again reiterate, it's worth it. Now, granted, you know, I'm caught up. I didn't start at Volume 1, so I had to catch up at some point.
I certainly, at some point, will be jumping on with these books because you have been a great salesman on these books. And, I mean, and you've just showed me what I've asked for, which is, yeah, just show me what the insides look like, show me what the content of the book is. I love the way the books look from, you know, you sending me cell phone photos. So I imagine when I see it in real life, it's going to be a complete done deal. I think it's a very awesome piece to have to tie in with the toy side of collecting.
Cool thing about this series, or maybe the maddening thing, depending on your perspective, it is impossible to just target one single volume and have all your favorites represented in that volume. Part of that is obviously from design. Each book, he puts in a choice selection of 82 to 94 vehicles, figures, playsets, and at the back of it, he always puts in a couple unreleased gems. Every volume is going to have that 82 to 94 spread. It's not going to be just one volume is all 85. I'm going to laundry list something real quick, and I know laundry lists are kind of boring to listen to, but I'll try to be quick because what all Dan includes, to me, I think it's sort of incredible. He shows concept sketches that show a wild variation before landing on the design that we get as the toy. He shows color tests that work in a similar way. Two-ups, paint masters, hard copies, office memos, HAMA memos, turnarounds, color charts, design pages, vehicle explosion charts, presentation art, diagrams, schematics, models. I can keep going. This list doesn't stop. Not every character or vehicle has all of these, because it's all based on what he's been able to uncover or find, etc. But he also has process of making articles in the front of the book. The trivia and details on the process and business of toy making is incredible. And back to like how you can't just target one volume. Volume 1 and Volume 7 have different versions of Destro and Roadblock. So, you know, I'm going to obviously be a bit partial on anything that has Roadblock in it. So 1 and 7 are going to be my two favorites. The attention to detail is incredible. And when he starts his Kickstarter, he already has the book done and pages and everything. So when the Kickstarter ends, like 2 months later, you have the book. There is no faster Kickstarter shipping. It's wild.
I think the thing that excels me the most on this is, and I know it's not for every character, but the alternative color tests. Seeing the alternative colors and seeing the input drawings and the character design drawings of these figures always makes me want to make modern renditions of these alternate colorways of whatever it is.
I made some highlights. Every time I get a new volume, I go back and I read all the old volumes. So Volume 1, just the highlights, right? He starts this whole process with a Vamp, Clutch, the Trooper, the Officer, and then a Sky Striker. That's like the beginning of the book. You know what I mean? The whole series starts with like a write-up from Kirk Bazigian and then those five. But before you even have time to catch your breath, he hits you with Ace, Major Blood, Duke, and the Flag. Jump right into Volume 2, you have Storm Shadow. Some of the concept drawings were hilarious. Like there's a lightning bolt on a sweater and he's got a beard and eye patch and a shotgun with a snake curling around one leg. That could have been our Storm Shadow. Like, huh? Volume 3 has color studies of the Razorback. I think are better looking than the Razorback we got. And all the schematics of the Mobat are wild. Jump into Volume 4 and I'm just giving you my highlights. Like, there's so much more to these. You might even have different favorites than mine, but Volume 4 has an explosion breakdown, urethane foam models, both the hammer and the MCC. Plus seeing like the human bats before they became the robot bats and all the different concept drawings for Firefly's phone. Incredible. To keep the laundry list going, Volume 5, Monkey Wrench could have been a female. There are 4 or 5 concept drawings of Monkey Wrench as a woman, and then there's the Monkey Wrench we know. The prototype models show some incredible Rolling Thunder type ICBM mechanics for the Hammerhead. And then the Condor color studies are even better than the Razorback color studies from a couple issues ago. And there are some Condor color studies that I think would have been mind-blowing had we got them as a toy. And then there was an unreleased vehicle called the Maniac that would have been a gorgeous counterpoint to the Crossfire had they done it. Volume 6 is like Dreadnought heavy. So if you're a Dreadnought person, Volume 6 is huge. Dan shows a figure buck and goes through a lot of the build process and even shows some 82 first shots, which is beautiful to be able to see. But you're 6 volumes in and he's still being able to show some of that stuff. And then this volume, there's a 3-page spread for V1 Destro, which was very Darth Vader looking in some early concept drawings. And then V1 Roadblock also got 3 pages, and V1 Viper also got 3 pages. That's 9 pages of glorious, high-profile, beautiful figures. And then how many concept drawings of the Tomahawk are just wild. Some of them don't even look like a helicopter. And then right at the very beginning of the book, one of my favorite things of this series, he has Polaroid photos. They're probably not Polaroids, but he puts them in the Polaroid format for the book. But he has all these pictures of employees of Hasbro that worked on G.I. Joe back then. Dude, I'm so ready for Volume 8. And I'll keep buying 2 copies of each for as long as he goes. From just talking to him, like, he has several more volumes in front of him, but now that he's teamed with Hasbro, I'm hoping he has even more than he expected.
Not that you would need any more selling after, like, the pitch you just gave, but the fact that Hasbro is backing him / working with him.
Yes.
To some degree, I understand, you know, he was doing this with or without their blessing or approval or whatever you want to call it. I mean, what more? I mean, yes, obviously Hasbro is Hasbro and things are complicated and things aren't always what we want them to be. But at the end of the day, for a fan doing a passion project to get picked up by the big dog, the biggest stamp of approval you could get. Now you've done what you do every time we talk heavy on these books, where you tell me, you know, 14 million things on why they should buy these books.
I'm clearly a fan of what Dan is doing. It's in my wheelhouse. It's history and esoteria and production knowledge on top of production detail and just a love of the brand and the craft and toys in general, art in general, etc. I'm the perfect target for this. I hugely recommend these books to anyone. Outside of the Kickstarter, you could go now to creatinggijoe.com if you wanted to order these books. I'm looking at the price for volumes 1 through 7, and it's not insignificant, but I can tell you it's worth it. Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us. This has been The Order of Battle.